Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Time to bury the tired narrative. And uncover stories not typically heard, but stories that need to be heard. Right or wrong, life or death, this isn't your typical law show. This is Big Angry Law with Charles Big Angry Adams on KPRZ 950. Now, Charles Adams.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Let's have a continuation of last night in the Kafka-esque absurdity that is dealing with the Austin Police Department. I'll refresh those who did not listen to last night's show. Wednesday night, my father drove to Austin to take my son to the Texas Chili Parlor. My son's going to school there. They're on Lavaca at West 15th. He parked his brand new Toyota Tundra on the street and someone hit it and then fled the scene. It turned out to be a valet or the valet supervisor at the Doubletree Hotel there in Austin. Now, the valet, of course, it's always about shielding liability, works for a company, PMC, Parking Management Company, which is a LLC, out of Tennessee, that is a national valet company. You know, everything's getting aggregated and private equity is coming in, gobbling up businesses, and it is what it is. But this kid driving a big heavy duty Dodge, brand new Dodge pickup truck made with a steel bed and steel bumpers used to pull cattle, or trailer for cattle, fifth wheel, smashed into my dad's truck and took off. I tracked the guy down. And his story was that he didn't realize he hit it. The eyewitnesses, which are the only reason we were able to identify him, that took pictures and set it in motion. Well, my dad talked to one today. It was very clear that that wasn't possible, that no, he actually hit my dad's truck and then had to reverse out of the wreck and then speed off while they were attempting to stop him and taking pictures. And it was the picture of the license plate that led me to identify the owner, contact the owner, find out the vehicle was valeted, all in the course of about an hour, thanks to all of my contacts. But hearing the fact that he had to back out of the wreck, so his story that he didn't realize it, there's no possibility it was true. I'm absolutely incensed, right? Austin PD was supposed to call me back within 24 hours because you can't talk to a human. I was told that even if you go to a police station, you can't interact with an officer. It's insane, right? But at the time, my dad, the owner of the truck that hit my dad, were there at the Doubletree with the suspect. A hit and run. A value ladder offense. So the amount of damage would define the value at the, you know, the least a arrestable misdemeanor, if not a state jail felony. And no one would come. No one cared. Because that's how you suppress crime, by making it impossible to report crime and not responding to crime. It was actually addressed. It was a conspiracy in one of the seasons of The Wire, right? And now it's just an everyday reality. Fact follows fiction sometimes. Well, I'm absolutely steamed. I talked to the general manager of the Doubletree, Stephanie. She's a horrible little story. And basically, it's not Hilton's fault. You need to take it up with PMC. Corporatism at its finest. That Doubletree is owned by RLJ Holdings. The first apology I got was from an executive there, part of the ownership team. And, of course, at this point, I'm incensed, and I want Stephanie fired, and I want Travis fired. Because Stephanie, I talked to her a couple of times, and she, much like Jacob at PMC, couldn't be colder and, well, we don't know what happened nonsense, right? Well, there's damage on the car that everyone agrees Travis was driving that matches the damage on my dad's car, truck, both trucks. And, well, he had the vehicle. Witnesses took pictures, and it's just insane. So this evening, I was a very good investigator as a police officer, a very good investigator as a lawyer, and I'm dogged in my pursuit. Well, I decide I'm going to call Travis's parents. Ryan, it turns out he's a little 20-year-old kid. He's got an Instagram, a fishing Instagram. Well, kind of looks like a little punk, right? But from a lakeside suburban community. And I'm thinking, if my kid did something like this, I'd want to know. Because I'd put a foot in his ass, right? Well, I start doing my research with my investigator. It turns out his father passed away in, I think, 2009. He's 20, so he would have been 9 years old. And, well, that's sad. But if you look at the obituary, it looks like the parents were already divorced because the mother wasn't mentioned in the eulogy I saw, unless I missed it, but I read it twice. And I identified the mother and decided to call her. Well, her cell phone didn't work, but there was a second cell phone listed for, and I called it, and a man answered, and I'm not mad at these people. It's not their fault. And I said, hey, my name's Charles Adams. Do you have a son named Travis Nietzsche? I'm trying to get a hold of Wendy. And it turns out that she has passed away too. And I'm talking to his stepfather, who's been a stepfather since he was a child. And of course, he had no idea. They've even confirmed that Travis worked there. I had no idea what occurred. But now I know this guy is a 20-year-old orphan. And I asked the dad to have him call me. We'll see if he does. See if he sounds contrite. And it's still just disgusting, right? That you hit somebody's car and take off, hope that you'll get away with it and just leave this 70 something year old man who got a brand new Tundra that he loved, And of course, Liberty Mutual, the insurer for PMC, has accepted liability and are supposed to calling me after a couple of days of, well, we don't know what happened, do we? Nonsense. But now, I'm in this hard push to get this kid arrested for the FSGI. That's the failure to stop and give information, which, again, is a value ladder offense based on the amount of damage to my dad's truck. And I just told my dad to have it fixed and pay out of pocket that we'll deal with the insurance later. Because it was my intent to sue all of them and seek exemplary damages for the hit and run. And I say this as someone in 23 years of being an attorney, I've never sued anyone for myself. Not a litigious person. It's weird, right? But I'm mad. It's my dad, right? But now I'm faced with this reality that this kid has been orphaned in his teens. And, well, that sucks too. So hopefully he'll call me. He'll apologize. I'll drop the police thing. I'll just get the restitution and I'll ease up on the fire everybody thing. I don't know. I'm still pissed at Doubletree. We'll be back.
Big Angry Law. With Charles Adams on KPRC 950.
If I had wings like Noah's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. Well, I had a man, strong and tall. He moved his body like a cannonball. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare.
So we're going to move on to my personal frustrations and the personal tragedies of a bad driver and apparently a bit dishonest young man to the issues facing Irish-American actor of some note, Alec Baldwin. We all remember that it was major news that on the set of a Western film, Rust, that was being shot in New Mexico, he discharged a pistol that had live rounds in it while pointing it at cinematographer Haley Hutchinson. He's now been charged along with another member of the crew of involuntary manslaughter under the code in New Mexico. Well, if you look at the statute, it is, in my opinion, going to be an extremely difficult prosecution. But let's listen to the prosecutor.
Well, along with my special prosecutor, we got the report from the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office. We initiated an extensive review of that, and I will say that it was a well-investigated case. But we had some follow-up that we had to do, had to speak with some experts. And once we read through everything and researched the case law and the law here in New Mexico, we realized that we believe that there was probable cause to charge Alec Baldwin and Hannah Gutierrez Reed with involuntary manslaughter.
And what were some of the key pieces of evidence that you used that factored into that decision?
Well, that there was such a lack of safety and safety standards on that set, that there were live rounds on set. They were mixed in with regular dummy rounds. Nobody was checking those, or at least they weren't checking them consistently. And then they somehow got loaded into a gun, handed off to Alec Baldwin. He didn't check it. He didn't do any of the things that he was supposed to do to make sure that he was safe or that anyone around him was safe. And then he pointed the gun at Helena Hutchins and he pulled the trigger.
You talk about the safety on the set. Was as part of your investigation?
That was a CNN interview of Mary Kamik Altuz, who is the Republican district attorney for the first, I believe, the first district there in New Mexico. Now, I think even in her interview, she has assisted Alec Baldwin in his defense. I do not think. So let me read. This is the New Mexico statutes, chapter 30, homicide, subsection. It's chapter 30, article 2, subsection 3, which is manslaughter. And then, so it's 32, it's 30, 2, so 3, B, which is involuntary manslaughter, consists of manslaughter committed in the commission of an unlawful act not amounting to a felony, or in the commission of a lawful act which might produce death in an unlawful manner or without due caution and circumspection. Now, the question is going to be, what responsibility did Alec Baldwin have when he's handed what he believes is a pistol filled with dummy rounds as a prop on a movie set? Now, it is the position of the district attorney that he had a responsibility, I guess, to unload the ammo and somehow ensure that it was dummy ammo. Well, let's listen to a conversation about the charges on The View, and I hate to tell y'all that I kind of agree with Joy Behar on this, but
you know, the DA who is indicting him, or whatever the legal term is right now, she's a big Republican. I'm only saying this because Alec Baldwin is a target for Republicans. They cannot stand him. Okay,
but
I'm just saying.
But
I'm not saying anything more than that.
The fact that he was handling the gun, and let's not also forget what George Clooney had to say.
What did he say? He
was on a podcast and he talks about what he does when he has a gun in his hand. How he opens it, how he shows that there's not any ammunition in the gun.
Right.
And Alec Baldwin was actually confronted with that statement, and his response in that George Stephanopoulos interview was, "Well, good for him. Good for him." And so I think that there's some blame here. Alec is, of course, saying that he doesn't have any blame. And the investigation so far supports that there's enough evidence to charge him.
Okay. Well, your issue here, initially, that initially, Alec made the claim that he did not pull the trigger. I don't think that's true. And the FBI determined that that revolver could not have discharged without the very significant weight of the trigger pull being pulled. There's a lot of pulls in that sentence to cause the bullet to discharge. But I want to parse the statement about, so George Clooney claims when he's handed a gun, he opens it up to see that it's unloaded. So if it's an automatic, which this wasn't, you would check and make sure the magazine has no bullets, then pull back the slide partially and make sure that there wasn't a chambered round. Or if you have a revolver, you would just open, and in old-timey revolvers, you actually pop the entire cylinder out. But in more modern ones, you just release the catch and look in there and see that there's no bullets. I don't see how Clooney's argument works, though, with a firearm filled with dummy rounds, with blanks, right? Which are supposed to explode like a real bullet, but not shoot a projectile from them. And, of course, this revolver was in fact loaded with real bullets. So I think you'd have to dig far deeper. And I think that, and although Alec was an executive producer or an EP of some sort, stars often negotiate bigger titles to get extra money in movies they shoot, even in smaller budget productions, like more importantly in smaller budget productions like this. And I've always found Alec Baldwin to be something of a horrible bore, right? He gets on my nerves. Made some good movies in the 80s and 90s, but he's just always kind of got under my skin. Never really enjoyed any of them. Billy, who was famous for a minute, and Steven, I've just never enjoyed any of them. Although I did like Steven and his movies that he did, Biodome with Pauly Shore, but it's the kind of stupid 90s humor that I enjoy. But had Alec opened it, he would have seen what he would have believed to be dummy rounds. So unless, as the EP or whatever his title was, he had control over safety, and he, apparently they were shooting, like target shooting on the set and stuff, and he participated in that and oversaw that and was okay with that, I don't see how there's any possibility that he has any liability. Now, what the claim is by the district attorney is that he had an absolute obligation before he used the gun and pulled the trigger to make sure that they were in fact dummy rounds in it. And I don't know how someone that wasn't sophisticated with the firearm would be able to tell, right? At least facially. I do think that whoever loaded the gun or whoever was responsible for that has some legal liability. There's clearly civil liability, but some criminal liability. I think he lacked the mens rea. He obviously wasn't engaging in a crime when he pulled the trigger on the gun. And I'm talking about the underlying crime for involuntary manslaughter. And I just don't see how any reasonable person could swear out an arrest warrant for him. And I do think this is politics. He's an outspoken Democrat. But I don't hear Joy Behar objecting when we've seen all the
big, angry law with Charles Adams continues.
A love-struck Romeo, sing the streets a serenade, laying everybody low with a love song that he made. Find the streetlight, steps out of the shade, says something like, "You and me, babe, how about it?" Juliet says, "Hey, it's Romeo, he nearly gave me a heart attack. He's underneath the window, just singing, Eli, my boyfriend's back. You shouldn't come around here singing up at people like that. Anyway, what you gonna do about it?" Juliet, the dice was loaded from the start, and I bet many you exploded into my heart, and I
Come on, can we just do Dire Straits for the rest of the show and not listen to me talk? Is that a possibility? I mean, we could. Look, it's that easy. It's that easy to me to switch back to Mark Knopfler to drown out my incredibly irritating voice.
come up on different streets. They both were streets.
All right, we got to get to it. And I want to talk about another prosecution that I think is incredibly ill-advised, but I'm more bothered. You know, we have the state of Illinois that was going to go to no cash bail, and except for exceptional circumstances at the beginning of the year, although some litigation has put that on hold. A lot of the court systems were claiming that they were going to proceed anyway, or the municipalities, the county court systems. Well, apparently in Springfield, Illinois, they're not following the new law, because two paramedics, Peter Cadigan and Peggy Finley, have been charged with murder and are being held in jail on a $1 million bond. It doesn't look like either of them have any criminal history. And it doesn't seem like there's any articulable reason to suggest that they are a danger to the community. This isn't an instance like where you have a nurse. Did I just whistle? It's been a long week. A nurse intentionally injecting poison or air into people's veins, doing things to kill people. I mean, we've had some nefarious medical stories both here in the United Kingdom and probably around the world. I guess I'm just paying attention to what I know. Now, this is a situation where paramedics were dispatched to deal with a 35-year-old hallucinating man, Earl Moore. His hallucinations were tied to addiction and withdrawals. And he was allegedly frustrating the paramedics. They are white. I believe, according to the statements made by Ben Crump, who's there to sue and make himself millions, that he is an African-American man. Attorney Crump said, "We saw it with so many tragedies in America. It's just so tragic that now this pattern seems to be spilling over to the first responders, to the EMTs. When you look at that video, the reason it's so shocking is because they offer Earl no consideration." Now, they were dispatched to a 911 call, and they tied him down. This is, well, to quote the mother, who's Rose Washington, who's, I'm sure, is very upset and indicates she is. She said, "They tied him down like some kind of animal and killed him. My baby suffocated because of their actions." Well, what happened is they laid him down on his stomach and strapped him down to the gurney. And they're being alleged that they strapped him down too tight after having some issues with him getting him out of the home. And the question is whether or not that you know, amounts to a murder. This occurred in early December of 2022. There was an autopsy report released January 9th. The basis of the first-degree murder, this is prison for life charge for these paramedics, is knows that such acts that they can be filed when the defendant knows that such acts create a strong probability of death or great bodily harm. They died from positional asphyxia. He was down, laid on his stomach with being strapped down to the gurney. They are looking at 20 to a minimum of 20 to 60 years in prison. Their body camera footage from the local police department in Springfield. Again, he was having some sort of alcohol or drug-related hallucinations and withdrawals. Most of the reporting is saying alcohol. He was in medical distress. Now, the female paramedic was seen on camera saying, "Sit up. You know what? I'm not playing. Sit up. Quit acting stupid. Sit up. Sit up now. I'm not playing with you tonight." Those comments suggest to me that she has probably dealt with this man repeatedly in the past. I could be wrong. I'm no Sherlock Holmes, but that is the suggestion. By saying, "I'm not playing with you tonight," it suggests a familiarity. She continued, "You're going to have to walk because we ain't carrying you." Of course, there's only two of them, and they both look to be in their 40s, maybe 50s. The police helped and lifted Moore to his feet between the two officers and walked him to the door. They got him outside and the police put him on the stretcher. Now the male paramedic put him on his stomach and the two paramedics are strapping him down to the stretcher. He died upon arriving at the hospital. The police's chief's position was, the officers who are not emergency medical professionals, not trained nor equipped to provide the necessary medical treatment or to transport patients in this type of situation. The officers turned over care of the patient to the licensed medical professionals at the scene in accordance with the Springfield Police Department policy. Now, I mean, I think I could see in this modern world trying to blame law enforcement as well, but I think it's something of a stretch. And I guess they agreed. They didn't think it was a stretch to blame the EMT professional. Now, I just have a hard time. Unless there is some evidence that they had a malicious intent, or that the goal was, I mean, if they have any articulable reason for placing him in that position, then I just have a very hard time seeing this as murder. But I really have. I mean, in the revolving door of our criminal justice system for murders now, the suggestion that these two EMTs that are licensed with no criminal history that we're dealing with, well, it has to be frustrating, right? An addict behaving poorly that I had to take to the hospital. Now, if they did, if they put him on his belly and strapped him down out of frustration with knowledge that it could asphyxiate and kill him, well, that does sound like murder. But being mildly frustrated and unwilling to carry a man much larger than you out of his home, well, that seems like a reasonable response, especially if you've dealt with him in the past. We would repeatedly deal with both the housed and the unhoused that were having withdrawal hallucinations from alcoholism. I had one bite me and one guy punch me. It can be a frustrating, difficult experience back when I was an officer. A positional asphyxiation, I hate that word, it's hard to pronounce, is a real thing. And everyone wants to talk about, well, George Floyd died of fentanyl. Well, fentanyl might have contributed to it, but you just can't sit on someone's back when they're in chest, especially when they're in some sort of drug-induced psychosis, without thinking there'll be a consequence. But I also know that medical examiners can call something a homicide when they want to. And we treat them like we have plenty of ME reports where they're discounting the nature of the realities of the incident to prevent a crime from being filed and vice versa. But at the end of the day, the charge requires that they had a level of knowledge which just doesn't make sense. And their bond suggests that they are somehow a continuing danger to society, which there's no effort to that. Now, there might be an underlying charge in the Illinois Penal Code, like criminally negligent homicide. But the suggestion that this is first-degree murder sounds like the district attorney's office is playing ball at the behest of Benjamin Crump or some other civil advocate trying to facilitate some monster settlement. And trying to tie their actions to some sort of racism just solely based on the race of the two EMTs, because that's it, right? They happen to be white. There's no racial animosity. There was just frustration at dealing with a belligerent drunk, which can be frustrating, right? And there is a cynicism that sets in. But unless they were aware that they posed a danger of death to him and did so, strapped him down in a way that they knew would cause him harm, this absolutely isn't first-degree murder. And the real question is, why is anyone willing to be a public servant anymore? Why would you do that now?
You're listening to Big Angry Law on KPRC 950.
Scarf it was out.
Well, it turns out, and I'm kind of tired of talking about him, but NBC News did a great timeline that I thought deserved a little attention, and only because the drag queen photos have emerged from Brazil of George Anthony de Valder Santos is the drag queen. I saw the name somewhere. I'm not seeing it now, but let's go through this timeline that it starts with we talked about it, the $3,000 raised for the dying service dog that he stole, allegedly. His mother dying on 9/11, but actually not even being in the country when 9/11 occurred, and dying in 2016. That he lied about the colleges he attended and his Jewish heritage. So it's a wonderful November 3, 2020. He runs for Congress, but loses to a Democratic rep, Tom Suozzi, concedes 2 weeks after the election. Then gives a speech at Donald Trump's rally on January 6th. And, you know, claimed the election was stolen. Announces his second campaign. His campaign website shows him as a graduate of Baruch College. They worked at Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. Files personal financial disclosure report. Says he has $11 million in assets, which was apparently a huge increase, as reported by the North Shore Leader, the small newspaper that broke this scandal, from his prior year report. November 8th, he wins. The first Republican LGBTQ congressperson. He claims to the Republican Jewish Coalition that there will, wait for it, now there will be three Jewish Republicans at the Capitol. He also had a position paper where he identified himself as a proud American Jew. Interview in New York, he said he lost four employees, that's the quote, at the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting. There was a gay bar that was shot up. And I think it was alleged, although it got diminished in the press, by someone of the Muslim faith who was on a theocratic mission to attack members of the LGBTQ community. There's also some suggestion the shooter was a self-loathing person because of feelings he had. I don't know which is true. It's just an all-around disgusting tragedy, and we've got to get past that point in America where we demonize people for being same-sex attracted. Nothing wrong with it. Grow the hell up. December 19th, New York Times finally comes after him. And, of course, he claims that this is defamation. But they do their work, right, when they want to. I mean, when they're going after a Republican, they work doubly hard. And that's just the truth. You want to pretend the New York Times isn't horribly ideologically biased? Well, but the real question is, why didn't the New York Times do this work in his first campaign or his second campaign to prevent this from occurring? You know, we don't know why, but it's a bit insane. Turns out that despite Santos claiming that his grandparents escaped the Holocaust, well, no. He had a website that said, quote, George's grandparents fled Jewish persecution in Ukraine, settled in Belgium, and again fled persecution during World War II. The problem is he doesn't have any Jewish ancestry. The Attorney General's office in New York says they're looking into it. The day after Christmas, he admits he lied about his educational history and some other things about his past. But he plants the flag firmly that he's never broken the law. He then suggests that the statement that he worked at Citigroup and Goldman Sachs was, and I quote, a poor choice of words. And about his Jewish heritage, here's the quote. I never claimed to be Jewish. I am a Catholic. Because I learned my maternal family had a Jewish background, I said I was Jew-ish. What the hell does that mean, Georgie? On the 28th, the Nassau County DA starts their investigation. States no one is above the law, and if a crime is committed in this county, we will prosecute it. He also does another interview with Tulsi Gabbard where he claims, I am not a fraud, I'm not a fake, I've made some mistakes. He also said it's not false that he worked at Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, but it is false. On the 2nd, Brazilian law enforcement authorities intend to revive fraud charges against the congressman because he's alleged to have stolen someone's checkbook in 2008. A Federal Election Commission complaint was filed saying that Santos was hiding where $705,000 came from. A weird allegation on January 9th that part of his campaign or congressional staff impersonated the Speaker of the House. Two Democrats from New York filed a House ethics complaint about his failure to file timely, accurate, and complete financial disclosure reports. I mean, it keeps going. Apparently, he claimed he was a star on the Baruch volleyball team. And he lied. Then he says on the January 12th, if 142,000 people ask him to resign, he will. To Steve Bannon's war room. On the 17th, McCarthy puts him on the Small Business Committee and the Science, Space, and Technology Committees. They're diminished as low-level committees. If the Small Business Committee, the economic backbone of this country, isn't one of the most important committees, it just shows you how broken our Congress is, and they don't want to realize the fact that it's small business people in this country that keep this damn experiment afloat. I've made that point. The immigration report shows that his mother wasn't here on 9/11. The dog story breaks also on the 18th. On the 19th, he denies being a Brazilian drag performer, but pictures appear of him in drag. Nothing against him for being a drag queen, but being a scumbag con artist, well, I mean, come on. What a great con artist. What an awful person. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.